Never Quit. Team Aim Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
You ever think about quitting?
It's the combat of life, hammering the snot out of you.
Well, stand by, dig in deep, and get ready to get fired up with us.
Welcome to the Team Never Quit podcast, the number one podcast that inspires you to fight on. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford, here with Mr. Never Quit himself, Marcus Luttrell.
Our mission is to help you embrace the suck of life, to teach you the values of working your ass off, and to interview the most hard-charging people on planet Earth.
We know life is hard. It's time for you to suck it up, Buttercup, and let us teach you to persevere in every environment imaginable by sharing real-world lessons learned by those who never quit. That's right. It's time, Marcus, for us to help them defeat the negative insurgency in their lives.
You fire me up. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's roll.
Let's roll.
And Marcus, we're back, buddy.
Another round.
Let's do it.
So we got a really interesting guest coming on today. His name is Adam Davis.
We do, and he's a friend of a guest of ours that we previously had on, Dr. David Grossman.
He is Dr. David Grossman. Fantastic show. Very interesting individual. You remember reading Grossman's book in Buds?
Oh, yeah. A mandatory reading, On Killing, On Combat. Matter of fact, before every deployment, remember he comes in and gives us his talk. Which you could hear a pin drop in there. It's hard enough to keep two or three frogmen, keep their attention. This dude he kept everyone's attention.
Yeah, he does that for not just military, but it's law enforcement.
Yeah.
He is very well known
circles.
He almost doesn't require mention. But the first book he came out with, On Killing, which was an analysis of psychological processes involved with killing of another human being, something he coined killology. And then he came out with On Combat after that, which was dealing with it. And there's a concept in there of sheepdogs.
Yeah, the difference between the sheep and the sheepdog. If you have no capacity for violence, then you are a healthy, productive citizen, a sheep. If you have a capacity for violence and no empathy for your fellow citizen, then you are defined as an aggressive sociopath, a wolf. But what if you have a capacity for violence and a deep love for your fellow citizen? Then you are a sheepdog, a warrior, someone who is walking the hero's path, someone who can walk into the heart of darkness, into the universal human phobia, and walk out unscathed. There, right there.
I mean, it's an interesting way to highlight the importance of, you know, our law enforcement, our first responders.
Any of our citizens that we call family and create this country with, they're defined right there. Those of us who are willing to go in and help others in the capacity of danger, and those who just sit around and wait. You know, if something bad happens, it happens. They hate violence so much that they won't even learn how to deal with it, mm-hmm. right? And that's a real thing in people. Some people just can't handle that. Some people can. That's why we're all different. That's why we're made certain ways, and that's what he's identifying here. And it's always incumbent upon the masses to remember that each one of us hold that position for a reason. If you have too much of one of them or not enough of one of them, then the other one can overtake and it kind of disseminates the herd, right? Too many wolves, not enough sheepdogs.
Right, those things have to be kept in check.
Yeah, man, kept in check. So that's what they do, and that's kind of where he's going with that.
In your concept about, it's denial. I mean, he writes here, we know that the sheep live in denial. That is that's what makes them sheep. They do not want to believe that there's evil in the world. They can accept the fact that fires can happen, which is why they have fire extinguishers, fire sprinklers, fire alarms, fire exits throughout their kids' schools. But many of them are outraged at the idea of putting an armed police officer in their kid's school. So
put your money in a bank.
It's about maintaining that balance.
You put a cop, you put fire alarms and police officers and vaults around your money, but you won't do that around your kid. You know what I mean?
Human beings are not rational.
We shouldn't have to. Yeah, but I mean, just think about it that way. What's your most important gift? What's your most important treasure? So he definitely does a good job of explaining that. And then the guest we have coming on today, Adam, he and the doc are together writing their words of wisdom out on paper. So
yeah, they've written a book together, which kind of starts to bring this full circle in how those people who have to go out and deal with, and specifically we're focusing here on, and we have a lot of listeners who are law enforcement, first responders, but people that go out and deal with other people's shit, you know, deal with their problems, deal with the ugly stuff in society. That the United States, we're fortunate enough to be isolated from, largely isolated from that.
Man, the fact you can pick up a phone and dial 911 and someone will come to help you is amazing.
Yeah,
think about that.
It's an amazing concept.
If you get in trouble, you can dial this number.
It does not
and literally
work like that
somebody
for most
you don't
people
know
in the world
will show up to help you.
Yeah, it does not work like that for most
no,
people in
anywhere
this world.
Else. No, absolutely not.
Or ever at any time in history. So those people that have to deal with that, you know, this is where Adam's really focused and helping people deal with. I have a quote here by Chuck Canterbury, who's the national president of the Fraternal Order of Police. He says, "Our officers wear protective clothing and other equipment to keep themselves safe from physical harm. But these officers also face challenges to their mental health and well-being. Unlike many other professions, sometimes you can't leave the job at the office." How true is that?
Very true. It's just what you are. It's not what you do.
Right.
I mean, in this kind of world, that's what that is. And everybody always gets down on them. That's the one we talk to everybody else around us about everything else around us except for when we have a problem, because they think that denotes weakness. But it's not weakness. It's just you're not trained in something that's just presented itself to you. So it's not a bad thing to ask your teammates for anything, any kind of help. I mean, from helping with directions to get somewhere or helping you get out of something. It's the same thing, man. And you just if they're you're truly your friends, and then they're going to understand. We're all human. We all have to go through this stuff together. So I understand both sides of that.
We've seen that numerous times on this show, that there's a time to reach out, and that does not denote weakness.
No.
That is absolutely necessary. But before we get into Adam any further here, we're going to get some more description, but we got to do some housekeeping, bud. So
okay. All right, to everybody out there, this is how you can pass along how to listen. You can stream directly from our website, tnqpodcast.com, virtually any other podcast app, whether iPhone or Android, iTunes, Stitcher, Podyssey, CastBox, and Radio Public. They have us.
All right, for social media, you can check us out. First stop for that is Team Never Quit. Of course, you can find that on all the major outlets. And then Instagram's a place where we put particular attention. I guess I say that. That's tongue-in-cheek right there, almost. But TNQ Podcast is the name of the show. Marcus Luttrell is where you can find Marcus over there. And you can find myself at the_wizard_TNQ.
Or you can type in tnqpodcast.com and listen directly to all our current episodes, past and present. As a matter of fact, everyone from David Goggins, Mike Rowe, Missy Franklin, Dakota Meyer, Wahlberg. Love you, brother. Sir Robert Young Pelton. Man, I love that guy. That's awesome. Captain Charlie Flo. Wow, man. What do you say about that dude? God dang, Laird, too. And Andre Agassi, brother. And many other incredible individuals that we've had a chance to have on here and listen to their stories, man. We also have merchandise anywhere from t-shirts to hats. So top to bottoms, guys and gals. Listeners write in stories. That's probably one of our best features on the website, man. You click under that tab and under write in stories, and it has all of them in there. Check it out.
All right, so let's get on to Adam Davis here and a little bit more specific information before we invite him on. Adam, a former police officer, author, and speaker, his mission is to help offer health and hope to those who walk the thin blue line, being familiar with the unique stresses and pressures of our law enforcement officers and first responders. His personal history is he had many years on the police department in Dothan, Alabama. He did, when we asked him about this, he'd done, it sounded like, just about every position that was possible there, from day patrol, traffic, homicide. He was a hostage negotiator. He grew up there, and I think what eventually happened with him is the stress of the job really started catching up with him, and he was, like many other officers, not properly equipped to deal with it. He had a crisis of faith, a crisis of family, a crisis of just his personal, his a crisis of him being able to personally handle the day-to-day on the job, and that even drove him to the point of considering suicide. He has been, so out of that, he was snatched back from that, I think you could possibly say, or rescued from that through his faith and a resurgence in that. He then wrote, he's gone on to write some books about this, The 52 Devotions for Law Enforcement, Behind the Badge, 365 Daily Devotions for Law Enforcement, and the one he penned with Dave Grossman called The Bulletproof Marriage. He's been featured on Law Enforcement Today, Police1.com, Fox News, The Huffington Post, CBN, The 700 Club. He also has a podcast called The Bulletproof Marriage Podcast.
From the sound of it, this guy's got all the intel we need from marriage to security advice. So I can't wait to hear what he has to say. Let's get him on.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, buddy, we got him. He's on the screen. He's going to be big.
Yeah, let's get him on. I can't wait to hear what he has to say.
Start talking to the man. Adam, welcome to our show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Davis. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you all so much for having me today.
Yeah, where are you calling us from, bud?
I'm calling you from Dothan, Alabama. We're about 90 minutes north of Panama City Beach, and it's a beautiful spring day. It's going to be 115 degrees before long, so we're enjoying this weather.
Is it Roll Tide, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Oh, there is no other way.
Yeah.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. There was just a pause in the
yeah,
Skype.
That was a technical delay.
He threw that right back out at me as soon as I hollered that out. That
whatsoever. Well, you know what, Adam? We before we get into the meat of this thing, we like to do something called the Mad Minute, which is going to be a series of questions to challenge your mental agility and stretch that neuroplasticity, or just a bunch of silly nonsense, and we'll see how it goes. But are you ready to participate in such a thing?
Let's rock and roll.
All right, buddy. Marcus, you want to kick this thing off?
Yeah, all right, brother. Favorite superhero?
Batman.
And why is that?
Because he represents the best, and you don't always see him.
Okay. Yeah, I dig Batman myself.
The last Batman. Justice League, when the Flash is like, hey, what's your superpower? He's like, I'm rich. Dude, but he does, man. He represents the middle down the... Because, look, we have the rules that we have to follow. A lot of people break them, and sometimes the rules help the people. I mean, if they manipulate them the wrong way, and then you got a guy who's trying to... help out in any way you can. Plus, he's human. That dude, when Superman picks him up by
the
throat.
That's one of the best parts. He's vulnerable.
In Justice League, when Superman had him and threw him off, he's like, oh, something's bleeding there on the inside.
Definitely something's bleeding. All right. Let's go with what are a couple movies, TV shows, book, whatever you've seen, you've been into lately, or you thought was particularly interesting?
Oh, man. Listen, I was just out in Texas a few weeks ago and had a conversation with a retired Texas Ranger. And so that put me on to doing a little research in Bonnie and Clyde and Frank Hamer. And so I watched The Highwayman with
that.
Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson.
Yep.
Absolutely awesome. That was a great movie. And I always loved Blue Bloods for obvious reasons, being a former cop.
Yep.
And you know, I don't really watch a lot. I listen to a lot of audiobooks and read a ton. But those are my... If I'm watching something, those are kind of the genre I'm in.
I tell you what, I had they caught the flu. The flu caught me last week, and it was a good one too, bro. So someone gave me the hot tip on that Highwaymen show, and it's really good.
Yeah,
I mean, they do a great job of that. Matter of fact, I got a book in my library that was sent to me. A Texas Ranger went around and got every Texas Ranger he could find. Some of them are dead now, to sign it. And it's just a history of the, you know, that we're talking about, the history of the Texas Rangers in there. And every year I try to send it to the academy to get all the guys to sign it. Because, those Texas Rangers, that's a Lonesome Dove is probably the best Western. It is the best Western ever made, hands down. But I in my opinion. But those... Man, it was kind of like the first SF unit to come out. Those guys were amazing.
There's a mystique and legend. They're still amazing.
Don't get me wrong,
guys,
but their history is twice as cool as any other I've ever come across, man, including ours, dude. It's something. Those Rangers.
They are awesome. They are the American Cowboys. They're good, man. To go.
Thank you guys for what you do. Seriously.
We need to try to get a Texas Ranger. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, what do you got?
I mean, you know they got to be cool if Chuck Norris played him.
Right?
I mean, Chuck doesn't mess around, dude.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God. All right, what was your first car?
Oh, my God. Can you ask me what my third car was?
What was your third car?
I'm just kidding. My first car, I think, is a joke from my dad. It was a Buick Riviera.
Awesome.
What's the matter with that?
Like two-door, just the cruiser, right?
Nothing wrong with a giant Buick Riviera. What year?
Beautiful velvet interior.
Right, like a red velvet, crushed velvet.
85. Yes.
Crushed velvet interior.
It was the love machine, man.
Right? My buddy drove one just like that, man. And it was the most comfortable thing. When those crushed velvet, like, that seat leans back, right? I mean, that's why you ride like that. Like you got that sideways lean because the AC works on that side.
Yeah, that shit works as a good insulating layer too. I bet that was not cool in the summer.
Oh man, first cars are supposed to be like that. If you roll up in a Lamborghini or Ferrari or BMW, that doesn't count. Your first car,
But you want it to be American muscle, right? That's supposed to be the first car. Like, my third car was a Camaro. So, I mean, we were getting better progressively.
It was a new one, or
I don't see anything wrong with it.
What year model Camaro?
I think it was like a 95 or something.
Oh, okay. So, new. Yeah, I got it.
I mean, it was brand new, but.
I got a 68 Mustang downstairs that, man, it's my That's brother nice. had it made for him, man. That thing is so. I stare at it every day.
Yep. All right. Let's go with another one. If you could pick a mentor, anyone in history or alive today that you'd want to spend a month with as a personal mentor, who would it be? Anyone in history?
Oh, my goodness. Just really? Man, I've got several. You know, and this is just really bringing it down to reality. For the past year, I've been working with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman and co-authoring some books with him. And he's been mentoring me, so I'm literally living on the dream that a lot of cops would love to have. I mean, they'd love to have a phone call with him every week and him sharpening you on your skills and on who you are and challenge you. I think I got to go with that, maybe because it's reality, but if I had a dream, I'm going to go with Nick Saban. And that's because of the leadership that he brings. I mean, he is an absolutely fantastic leader. When I was policing, I had an opportunity to spend some time with him. And, man, he is a sharp, sharp individual. Very sharp.
Hey, he's a great guy. I got a chance to go in and talk to the Bama football team. And beforehand, I went up to the hangout in the office with him. Uh-huh. I had to go through more security checkpoints to get to him than I did the president. He runs a real tight ship up there.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey, he's great, though. He is, man. He is, he is a he is the absolute general when it comes to – running the show up there, man. That guy knows what he's doing. It's truly something.
Oh, yeah.
And Doc Grossman, he's the one to put me back together every time I get my wig split open or my bones knocked out of my body.
We had him on the show a couple of years ago, too.
Oh, yeah. He is he's squared away. We just finished our second book together.
Did you?
And that's my fifth. Yeah, it was the hardest one I've ever written. It was based on the book that he's written. You probably read On Combat.
Sure.
Oh, we have to. Yeah.
We wrote a spiritual warfare. Yeah. Yeah. We wrote a spiritual warfare book based on that. And, man, tying the psychology and the physiology and all the science and all the data into that and running parallels with the faith side of things, it was tough. But, man, that book is going to rock some worlds because it's going to open some doors and some eyes and help you see things for what they really are.
Oh, yeah. When you're rolling with Jesus. You don't have to worry about learning all the psychology and all that every other part, man. It's just pure confidence right there. when you don't have that pure faith inside of you, like most of us do, that's when you got to come up with everything else to keep you getting through it, like the shortcuts, the superstitions, and the training, everything really. Hmm. But
what's this book going to be called?
Right.
And when's it coming out?
It's going to be called On Spiritual Combat, mm-hmm. on Spiritual Combat, and it'll release in the spring of 2020. It was originally supposed to be like 36,000 words. That was just my part. And then Colonel Grossman coming in and added about 36,000 more.
No, son, watch out. You got to do it like this.
Move over, young grasshopper.
Yeah,
yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's good. It's
you're good. You're man. Doing well. Good. You're like me, but, you know, just, yeah, not me yet. You're slower, and he's got a unique way of talking to you. He's great. I never had a problem, ever.
All right, let's go with another one. This is going to make you think a bit. Give us one legal thing that you would choose to make illegal, or one illegal thing you would choose to make legal.
Let's see. Stupidity should be illegal, like straight up. Seriously.
Good luck eliminating
I think that we could reduce like a lot of our world's problems. And eliminate a lot of issues if we could just say this is a crime and you're going to go away. I think that if there was anything that we would make that's currently illegal that we would repeal, I don't know. I mean, there's some issues. You know, obviously you would think that some of the hot topic issues would be it, but not really. I think that in a lot of places where they're fighting to take away our right to carry firearms, I think that would be, because when you leave law enforcement and you walk into the private sector, there's a big change, you know, and you don't have the authority to carry anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be one of the biggest things. That would be, you know, hey, let every law-abiding citizen carry a firearm. And I can't believe we're having to talk about that. I mean, but, you know, so many but, you know, it is what it is. And I think that if there's anything that we could do, we would absolutely protect that with everything we have and fight to make that an easier process for every law-abiding citizen in America. I mean, you know, there's some places that are saying, you know, hey, if you got some signs of post-traumatic stress as a cop, then we're going to take your firearm. And, you know, there's some certain departments that are talking about that right now in the news. And I don't think that that's right. I don't think that should be a punishment for doing your job and doing it well. So I think that number one thing is protecting our right to carry firearms, period. And there's some laws against it, whether, you know, they don't come out straight up with a law that says, hey, you cannot carry a firearm, but there's certain ways they can dress that up and make it really difficult. And, or if you go to the establishment and have it, you know, just, I think, protect that right.
Yeah, well, they come at it from oblique angles, trying to create these restrictions that eventually whittle away at that right.
The one thing you don't ever mess with is the foundation this is written on, right? The Constitution, correct? And it's just don't ever mess with that. See, that shouldn't even come up for debate, you know, unless it's some kind of a grievous, solely thing but on the foundation of it. But there are so many rules and regulations on firearms that don't even, there's thousands of them, man, that people want to be applied, but either they don't do it or it's an old, basically what it boils down to, man, is just sit down. And those of us who are advocates for guns, and which most of the time people who advocate guns advocate gun control. We don't want an idiot. You know, I mean, there are people that don't need to have a firearm in their hand. I have to go through a background check every time I buy a weapon. I didn't know that wasn't a thing. I'm pretty sure everyone has to do that, as you should. Just, you got to register your car. I mean, anything that someone has to be trained in that could potentially hurt somebody, you might want to keep a leash on it at the very least. Moreover, most importantly, it's training. The biggest thing we as police officers and in the military, what we do is safety. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. You can't even put a round in that thing before you know every component, how to break it down, clean it, where business end is, all that.
Right.
You know that thing so well, and that's safety. And the most dangerous thing on the planet is an undisciplined human mind. So, look, I don't like snakes, but we have them out here, so I know how to deal with them if I come across them. So it's basically just getting trained in as many things that could possibly hurt you. You train your kids to protect themselves in every capacity when they're at home, eat, drink, you know, get dressed. I mean, if there's something out there that can hurt them, you teach them about it.
Well, and the other aspect of this, Adam, particularly for you, and we might get into this later, is that, you know, that's a primary tool in the being able to go by a sheepdog mentality, which you probably expand on that a little bit further. But Let's get one one more question here. Wait, whose turn is it? It's your turn or my turn?
Go ahead.
It's my turn?
Go ahead.
All right, let's go with... no, we're not going to do that one. what was the worst job you ever had?
Yeah, in high school, I became a sophomore. My dad said, you can choose to continue doing all these things, or you can get a job, or, you know, and have a car. So I think my first job was working with an AC company, a very small company. The man's passed away now, but my job, I went into all the attics in the summertime and all the crawl spaces. I've never been a real small person, but that job really sucked. But I think probably the worst job of my entire life was working in a bank in high school as part of co-op. That absolutely sucked. It was horrible. I'm not a sit inside the bank type of person. It was miserable, and I never ever want to go back.
Yeah, I would have been looking at you. I'd have never, a banker wasn't the first thing that popped into my head.
No, it can be tough doing a tedious job or one where you can't. Some people just got to move around. I'm one of those people. And I would not be good at a desk.
We know you are.
No. God bless the people who are, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're all different. Everybody's unique, right? If you boil it all the way back to the hunter and gatherers, right? I mean, it's still inside of us. Some of us just can't sit around and do that. Luckily, thank God there's people who get out and go on the move and hunt and fish and feed and all that.
You got one more, bud?
Yeah, one more. All right, brother, movie character you'd like to play out in real life.
Oh,
you already used the Highwayman, so that one's out.
That's a good show.
Yeah. That was a great movie. If people haven't seen that.
I would go back and play the Texas Rangers band. Play it back on you. I don't know, man. Let's see. Oh, gosh, that's tough. Let's just go with Rocky. How about that?
Ah. Love that one.
All right. I mean, who doesn't love Rocky?
I thought you were going to go with RoboCop.
Who doesn't love Rocky?
Dude, I looked up, RoboCop was on TV the other day. That's why I brought that up. I tried to look up his pistol that he has. Have you ever, you know what that is? It's actually a real gun. It's a Beretta. I can never remember the number on it. I'll look it up. But they had one for sale. It was like $3 million. It's an automatic pistol. I'll look it up. Yeah, it's a bit steep.
Are you talking about the original RoboCop?
I don't. That's a good question. It must have been.
I'm not familiar enough to comment on this.
You've never seen RoboCop?
I don't think I've actually ever watched the movie.
All right, stop the interview.
Stop, Ted.
We'll put it on the big screen. We'll all three watch it while we're doing the interview. Good Lord, son.
All right, we're going to close it out with this one. Who would win in a fight to the death, a one-foot-tall gorilla or a domestic house cat?
Oh, a house cat. Oh, my God. Ever been in a fight with a cat? That's horrible.
Right? That's my
thing. They're agile. They're fast.
All right. Well, as fun as this is, the reason why they come and listen to us is because they're able to pull some inspirational points from, well, more than inspiration, lessons learned, inspiration. It depends on what they need, motivation to keep going through what they're dealing with. And yeah, we would love to hear from you, you know, about your, you know, greatest never quit story and just what our listeners can glean from that. In the wisdom that you have to put down.
Yeah, we all go through our trials in our life, man, and even though the situation may be different, man, going through it and pain and chaos, it's absolutely a matter of perspective of the person who's going through it and the situation. We all handle things differently, but how you get through it is the most important thing.
Absolutely. I'm going to give my ultimate never quit moment, but I'm going to give just a few seconds worth of a backstory.
Sure.
I grew up in a pastor's home and thought I had like some strong faith. I thought I was squared away. I wasn't like a crystal clean Christian or nothing. I still screwed up a bunch, but I thought I had strong faith going into my career in law enforcement. When I went into my career in law enforcement, I went into it with plans to retire, to climb as high as I could. I wanted to do everything. And somewhere, I don't know, maybe halfway through, I had done a lot of work, had a lot of fun, and found myself becoming a pretty bitter person, and really hard to get along with, according to my wife and others. And so I got to the point to where I really, you know, I couldn't come home and talk to my wife. I couldn't talk to friends because all my friends had split, which is pretty, you know, customary. Most of the people that you were friends with before you put on a badge, they're going to dip after you put the badge on. You're not going to hear from them unless they need you. And then, you want to
explain a little bit more why that is for people listening?
I think it may be a little bit of intimidation. I think it's because there is a little bit of a change that occurs, whether for the good or bad. Mm-hmm. You're not to the point where you want to put up with any bull crap anymore. And if they're doing some of that, then they know you're not going to want to have any part of it. And then too, you're just busy. My God, man. I mean, and if you have a family, you don't have time for all the stuff. And so, I think, you know, it's something on both sides of the fence. You know, it's a two-way street, but, for me, you know, in the culture, you're not supposed to really talk about your problems. You're not supposed to talk about the stuff you're dealing with because it's an indication that you're weak or you got a weak link in the chain or something, and then you're ostracized. And so I was that way, and so I shut down, and I began to question my faith. And I literally got to the point to where I spent several months questioning what I believed all my life growing up, which was my foundation for even existing. Mm-hmm. And I got to a point, man, I was drinking all the time, and, you know, I was like a lot and every day. And and when we'd get together for squad parties or whatever, conferences, it was a competition of who could drink the most. And I would like run to the finish line. And I'll never forget sitting in my patrol car one night and just really just down and out. And I had battled thoughts of suicide. And I've talked about that openly. And I battled thoughts of suicide. I battled thoughts. I mean, I was depressed like crazy and still getting up, putting my boots on, putting my gear on, and going to do my work. And but it was affecting more than just me. It was affecting my wife. It was affecting my beautiful kids. It was affecting my family. I didn't quit. I was ready to quit. I was ready to say, you know, screw it all. What's the purpose of even doing this? I mean, you're going to work 25 years and have to get a part-time job after I'm done just to make ends meet. Why? Why should I continue doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, you got people who don't give a crap about you. Why should I keep going? And then something clicked. And instead of ending it all, I decided to dig a little deeper in my faith and understand why I believe what I believe. And I just got to a point today that, you know, to a point one day where I said verbally in my police car, I said, okay, God, I said, I can't figure you out. I can't prove you. I can't lay any of this out, and I can't make sense of everything going on around me, but I believe in you because I choose to believe in you. And, if you'll show me the way, man, I'll go. And if you'll just make it clear, I'll go. I've told that story a number of times, and I think that that's probably my ultimate never quit moment. That moment right there, because instead of ending it, I chose to continue fighting. And, you know, I don't know that I had that before I got into law enforcement. I really don't. I don't know that I had that before I became a cop. There was something instilled in me in training. There was something instilled in me day after day, mile after mile, push up after push up, pull up after pull up. Something that was instilled in me by my trainers, who were all former military, that said, you know, you are absolutely not a quitter, even when I wanted to quit. And so I've had other cops that reach out to me all across the country. They'll private message me because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a therapist. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to flip them. You know, I'm not going to turn them in for nothing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they reach out and I'm able to help them, but just as a peer. But for me, it was turning to my faith. A faith that I questioned and faith that I doubted. Now, I'm not a lily white Christian. I go and I'm a preacher. I'm just a guy who wants to help others who are ready to quit. dig back in and find the help they need to keep fighting. So that was for me. It was a moment of questioning my faith and ultimate total surrender to God and doing whatever he wanted me to do. And that led to writing books, and here I am today.
Amen.
Well, can we, why don't we go, can we get back? No. That's really, there's a bunch of questions that are running through my head, but can we back up a hair and go a little deeper into the development that, the road that took you into that crisis point and how that developed a little bit more. And then maybe after that, we can get a little closer into the nitty gritty on how you turned, you know, just that whole process.
I understand. Yeah. So leading up to that, we hear the term sheepdogs a lot. Mm-hmm. And we often look at ourselves in some image of that as cops or anybody who's willing to stand between evil. But cops are, if you've ever worked with canines, if you've ever seen, military canines, law enforcement canines, cops are a lot like those canines. If you put a pack of dogs together, we're going to nip each other. And it's not because we hate each other. We're going to nip you to root out the weak one, to sharpen each other and keep us on our heels. And that's sort of how our culture is. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a very important thread of our culture.
I think we can relate to that.
But for me...
Yeah, it has to be that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, it was seeing the kids. It was seeing the innocent that are just mauled and mangled and attacked. And the first couple of calls, it was like, man, this is just part of the job. This is just this is why I'm here. And then you see the justice system fail in different ways. That's a whole other segment. But for me, it was just allowing, and this is totally on me, because I didn't know at the time. Mm-hmm. It was allowing all of the experiences that I had to layer up and stack up. And so as a man, I was supposed to push all that stuff down and keep suppressing it and not talk to anybody about it. You just don't want to come home and tell your wife everything that you see. And I didn't. And so I allowed it to just kind of build up until one day, it's got to go somewhere, man. It's got to go somewhere. And I think that's where it came from. It just all boiled up, and I started saying, if God loves man, if God loves mankind, if God loves us, if he even exists, why in the crap is all this stuff going on? There is so much violence in America. Mm-hmm. And Colonel Grossman will tell you, our medical technology is keeping people alive at a rate that if we had the same medical technology today that we did in the 70s, our murder, homicide rate would be astronomical. It's not higher than what it is because of our medical technology. And so it was just seeing all the stuff and questioning and allowing the stuff I'd seen and experienced to stack up and not dealing with it properly because I didn't know how to deal with it properly. Mm-hmm. I think that's what sort of led me to that point.
How old are you now?
37.
Oh, man, it's those moments we go through in the beginning part. You just got to think about, like, gold is forged in fire, right? Our most precious stones are forged out of pressure. And the first part of this, the first 40 years is supposed to be in darkness. It's like training, right? It's just a test. Like, every situation and scenario that you've been placed in up to this point was training for what's ahead of you. Just think about it. If you could do it like this, like before we came down here, if you wrote out your story, right, and you're down here playing it out now, you wouldn't have all good times in there, especially because you know what you're made of on the inside. And everyone has a sin wrapped up inside of them, right? And when you get willpower, and that's your choice whether or not you can either abuse your sin, like if it's wrath and you hurt people, you're abusing it. But if you take wrath and you use it to help people from wrath, then it becomes a virtue, and it's just everything that you kind of, it's tough in the beginning. You don't know what's going on, especially if you have faith, right? It's like, why is this? But it says it right there in the training manual that it's supposed to be hard, and there wouldn't be anything you got yourself put that was thrown in front of me that you couldn't handle. That's not how it works. You can handle it. Just a lot of times in situations, fear comes from the unknown. You don't know what you're dealing with, right? Or what. And but if you're getting the kind of the heebie-jeebies and your hair stand up on the back of your neck, that means you just need to look at it and see what's happening. But and take your time. Everybody gets in a rush to do everything. It's just like slow is smooth, smooth is fast. We say that all the time. And just like with everything else you learn to do coming up, I mean, that's the same thing. You didn't know how to dress yourself or do any of that, but after time, it's practice. And the more you do it, the more it becomes natural to you. And that's with anything in life. Wizard and I tell people all the time, like, we're not heroes, man. Hero stands for humanity's ever-evolving one. It means one day you're going to get put in a situation that you're not ready for, that you're not trained for, and you go anyways. And just see what happens. And that identifies you as a hero. Being SEALs, we're literally specialists at everything almost in the sea, air, and land. Trained ourselves out of being heroes. We just do our jobs. Yeah. And you're getting to that point now where you understand a little bit what's happening. You see both sides of it. Like I say, from 0 to 40, you just have an opinion. 40 to 60, you have perspective. And then wisdom drops in after that. And another thing people get in a hurry about it, like you get out of college, you want to get a house, cars, dog, kids, all that. It's basically the stuff that you're supposed to acquire throughout life. If the first 40 years are supposed to be an adventure and you strap all the treasure down, you know, right there in the beginning, then you're just going to have to defend it. But if you spend your whole life going out there and earning it, right? I mean, that kind of, that just like you said, Wizard, man, that adventurous spirit. You learn more about yourself out in the world around all of our people than you do back in one spot, sitting there just, you know, looking at the same thing every day.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Not supposed to work that way. Variety is the spice of life. It's what makes everything beautiful. And what you do, anytime a police, look, you got to know on your face, most people don't like dealing with other people's crap, right? So anybody who's willing to put on a uniform and put a badge on and come over and help you out with your problems, I mean, think about that. So you... That's why it's so incumbent on us to treat our law enforcement with as much respect as they deserve and they've earned, right? And people abuse it. And every clique, every little society, every little whatever has their own. We're all humans, right? We come from the same family, and it's just like some of them are bad. And then you got some of the real. It's the love of the opposites. Very rarely are you just going to have everything solid. You got to have that one throw off, right? You need them. Keeps everything sharp. Like if you look at every person in your life as a stone, and as you go through life, they're either going to dull you or they're going to sharpen you. And our ladies, they polish us out, right? So if you're somewhere and you're starting to get dulled out, man, look around the and check out the people you're standing with, because there's a lot of them out there. And that's the coolest part about this whole thing. And you're right. You know, when you strap on a uniform, it's not by design. I'm fortunate. I still have the same friends I've had since kindergarten. But you just move into a different life. Once you throw that skin on, all right, that forever uniform, police officer, firefighter, first responders, that's a forever uniform, because someone's got to always rotate into it. That's what keeps this place going. You put all those uniforms together, you get camouflage. We're the ones that defend it. And We're guilty. I heard you say, man, you know, guys in our line, we just don't talk about it because it sounds like you don't go to medical. Like, you need to go to medical, get that checked out. Like, why, man? I'm fine, dude. It's good. You know, it's not not embarrassed. I think it's just the fact that you don't want to get pulled off the line.
Well, I think it tends to run contrary to what is typically seen as the characteristics necessary to do the job well. But you said something a second ago. I got a piece of advice a long time ago that said that, you know, from somebody that I was employed by, and they said, you know, whatever you go forward and do in life, find something to do where you're dealing with happy people. You don't want to be fixing people's problems all the time. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a good piece of advice, but there's a truth in that. It's hard dealing with people who are having problems every day. And as you were talking and going through, I'd also heard you talk about resilience and how important that is. And I think, so the hanging question now is, how does someone in that line of work, how do they become resilient? How do they maintain the endurance in a healthy manner to do that work? Because God knows it's important work.
Yeah, it's. I was talking to a doctor this week. We put together some programs for the Bulletproof Marriage book that Colonel Grossman and I did. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how people read books, how they go through training, but often they don't operationalize much information. There's so much training out there on building a resilient mind, making yourself strong in every area. But there's just some crap you got to just work through it. And I think the biggest thing there, the little piece that I used throughout my whole story was applying what I actually learned. Too often we just, we learn it and we throw it to the back. And when I started actually applying what I learned and what I knew and what I believed in, mm-hmm. and not just talking about it, then it started changing things. So yeah, the resiliency is oftentimes just what we've learned, what we believe. It's rooted in what we believe ultimately. And then when we start applying it and really walking in it, as opposed to just talking about it, it starts changing things.
Can you get some specifics on that? Some specifics on what those things are?
I thought that fate made me weak as a man and as a warrior. I thought that, as mm-hmm. a cop, if I was a man of fate, that I would be passive and that wasn't the case. And so it was just looking at what I believed. And when I realized the truth about fate, and then I started studying how it could help me, it started flipping the script for me a little bit and started making me a little bit more, more resilient. And because it was something that was beyond me, it was something that was beyond serving myself. I was no longer serving myself. I was no longer worrying about what other people thought about me. And it was understanding that I was doing something for others and that I had brothers around me and, we were in this together. And so, the resiliency part came from what's here, mm-hmm. but also what's here in your heart, what's here in your mind. And, you got to believe in something. You got to believe in something bigger than yourself. If this is all I got to believe in, I'm screwed, like big time. Mm-hmm. And so it's tied mm-hmm. to what you ultimately believe in.
Faith lets you understand who you are and what you are. I mean, it kind of takes everything else out of the picture. I mean, we tell each other we got problems and this is a problem and that's what you are. And this is, but I mean, if you kind of understand your baseline and what you're made of and where you come from and who's watching out for you, then the rest is kind of an adventure.
That baseline. Exactly.
Yeah. Everybody, I mean, it's an adventure. You go out and that on. First part, I mean, like I said, you're still trying to figure out what it's tough, man. Life is tough. There's no doubt about that. Right. And as you go through it, the obstacles that are put in front of you, they're designed for a reason, to keep you at certain places in your life for certain periods of time until you you start paying attention. I mean, we don't have any more written tests till once you get out of school. There's only the hard times. And each one of those kind of drive you in a certain direction until eventually what happens is that you pick it up. And then once you pick it up, you got to – there's that calm, right? They got a calm before the storm, and you realize what's happening, what's really going on around here, and then you kind of say, all right, man, maybe it's incumbent upon me to start giving back, because obviously somebody gave this to me. And if they were willing to take the time to pass all this stuff into my head, the least I can do is help them out, help the ones coming after me.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Well, it's selfish not to do that, right?
I think that for me, it was wanting to do something that I wanted to do something that lasted, and maybe this is egotistical. I really don't give a crap, but I wanted to do something that lasted longer than my lifespan. I wanted to do something bigger than me, and law enforcement allowed me to do that. But there was a man who once told me there's only two ways that we can immortalize ourselves, and that's through a written book or through our faith in Christ. And so I've been married since I was 18.
Congratulations.
To the same woman.
Yeah, you Alabama boys.
Yeah, man. Hey, listen, I thought I knew it all. I have made some really stupid decisions in my life. That's not one of them. But I made some really stupid decisions in my life that have cost me. But, man. Talking about the whole, you're supposed to do this. And I didn't go to college until I was in my late 20s. And I was the first person in my family to ever go to college and graduate with a 4-year degree. And I'm not even using it like at all. But that's
man, but it looks cool on that wall, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Hey, yeah, it's an expensive piece of paper, but whatever. So yeah, just don't quit. Believe in yourself and believe in something higher. So, yep, that's good.
Well, you talked about not having an outlet. We keep going back to the initial story that you were running through, but there's so many avenues in that. We touched on sort of recovering from digging yourself out of the hole and finding some resiliency and how to do that. But you had talked about not having an outlet for the buildup of all these things that you're cumulatively coming in and experiencing on the street, you know, day to day. Did you find that? Did you find an effective means to?
Yeah, it as good as the alcohol tasted at the time, that was not the proper outlet. Right. For me, and this is really weird, but sitting down, and I've written things that nobody in this world has ever read, and it was stuff that I sat down when I'd come home, I'd take my vest off, I'd take my duty belt off, and I'd just sit there and just start dumping stuff out and just unloading it. And it was mainly because of the culture that we've created in a lot of our departments that says, if you talk about this, you know, you're weak, or fill in the blank of however you want to call that, you know. And we have to create a culture that says we are supposed to be brothers, and this is supposed to be a brotherhood. And if you're dealing with some crap, you need to come and sit down. Let's have a beer. Let's have a cup of coffee, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And let's talk through it. Let's talk about it. Dump it out. Lay it out and get through it. But instead, we've created cultures of isolation where we're having to walk through it on our own. So, yeah, I found it. I'm thankful that I have some very dear friends who have been in law enforcement for probably longer than I've been alive, who called and said, hey, what's up? And between that and starting to write, those were my outlets, you know. And you know, I tried to find pastors to talk to, and there were some really good pastors with really well meaning intentions, but they just didn't get what we were going through. They didn't get the stories, and they couldn't handle some of the stuff we were talking about. And so I think it was important to create some outlets. And so it's important to find an outlet, man, and find a healthy, productive outlet, because there can be some negative outlets, there can be some bad outlets that lead to bad consequences. So healthy outlets to getting rid of that stuff is important.
That's what I started doing, writing. And you talk to the pastors and preachers, and you know, they understand up to what they're allowed to understand. Sometimes you think you're just talking over them or talking through them or whatever, but you got to think that most of them, I mean, it's, look at what you're dealing with. Same way with doctors and lawyers, anybody. It's always look at the person. You never actually know what you're dealing with. Person who graduates last and is in med school is still a doctor. It's if you'll know when you see them, man. When it's, you're just talking about it, when you're, we do create a society where we don't talk to the guys that are in our reality, right, so to speak, the ones we go to day to day, because we don't ever want them to think that we're having a problem, can't figure this out.
But you don't want to show weakness.
Yeah, right.
And vulnerability.
Yeah,
seems to run contrary to the culture.
It does. Right? But I think that's a cool part about our generation and what's happened to us, man. Is, you know, we've been through so much stuff together. Eventually, life has a way of shoving you around to whatever you need, right? And you'll find somebody to talk to you about this stuff is on the same kind of playing field. It's all relative to time. I mean, once you get to the point where you can start teaching this stuff and you're giving back, you have to talk about it, right? I mean, it's funny when we're in the moment in the young profession part of it, when you're driving, it's like, man, just get the damn car right. Let me drive it. You know what I mean? But when you have the driver's ear and you're in the pit crew and you're calling the shots, man, you need to know that person can listen and they can hear what you're trying to say and that they can assimilate in the car and make this thing work right. That's what it all boils down to, what we do, and that's a team environment. I mean, that's what makes it so proficient at what we do. We talk about everything else, but if you're having a little problem, if you get stuck somewhere, I think that's why some of the guys get married. You know, I mean, you're lucky enough to have one of those, one of our ladies pull you in. There's something truly right. You found yours 18. I had to, you know, Lord kept mine from me for a while, but it, I think to the younger guys out there, seriously, man, if you're having some problems with something, don't be embarrassed to talk to your teammate about it, because all that is, it's not a weakness, man. It's just probably something, it is something you're not trained in. It's an emotion that you get. I mean, we all get emotions in everything we have to step into in training, and we talk about it. We talk about everything else, right? I always looked at it like I just didn't pick up that part. If I was having a problem, like, oh, I didn't pick that piece up when everybody else did. You know what I mean? So if they know something that I don't, then I ask them. I'm like, hey, man, how are you dealing with that part? Yeah. And then if it's like, man, that was dumb, you know, it's like, that's not going to help me at all. Or you never know, man. They may have it figured out really well. I mean, some of our guys do, you know, man, they pick that stuff up so fast, it's not even funny. Like, how do you get that like that, man? Like, I don't know, dude. I just do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, I think it's been established that the benefit of forming some support with the men or women that you're working with as a first responder or whatnot is critical. But it's not necessarily that easy. Do you have any, you know, give any advice as far as how someone goes about the practicality of putting that together, how to approach, you know, the other people you're working with?
Yep. I don't know how they are across the country, but most departments, they have zones or sectors or wards or whatever. That's how they break their city up into pieces, mm-hmm. and they assign officers and deputies to work that. Most of the time, you're assigned with a zone partner who's going to work with you in that. Most of the time, you're going to have a very, very tight relationship. Man, every once in a while, you don't have to make this like, you know, kumbaya or nothing, but every once in a while, ask your partner who you're serving with, who you are regularly going through doors together with.
Right.
Ask them, hey man, are you okay? How's the family? How you doing? Are you, you know, is there anything we'll talk about? We're good. Or take the first step and say, hey, can I talk to you about something? And, I mean, you know, if you trust them enough to stack up and go into a building, or deal with something on the street, you know that you can trust them. I think that that's one of the biggest problems is because there's a perspective that if I tell you something's going on with me, mm-hmm. personal, whatever, that's going to cause you to doubt me in a moment of truth. And we have to be able to separate that and say, no, we're humans. We're humans before we're cops. We're human beings. And this is, we need each other. The worst we are is when we're isolated. And so it's going to take a little vulnerability. It's going to take some trust, but most of the time you've already got that trust established because you've already been through some crap together. And so I think it's just taking some initiative and checking on each other. And that sounds really simple, but maybe we're overthinking it. And just take the initiative and say, hey, are you okay? And if they're always shutting you off, ask open-ended questions. how's the family? You know, not just a yes or no. So, and then, you know, maybe say, hey, can I talk to you about something? And just lay it out there. And there's got to be an element of trust. And because of some of the things that have happened in our society and our culture pertaining to law enforcement over the past 10 years, I think that it's damaged that trust. It's damaged that brotherhood, and it's time to restore it. And the only way we can restore it is through trust and communication and making it stronger. Because if we don't, it's going to be nasty. So we've got to do something. Dude, there's been, I think, as of last one I saw, there's been 62 suicides in law enforcement since January the 1st. I don't hold me to that, but it's in the 60s. And that's way too many. I mean, that's outnumbered line of duty deaths left and right. And these men and women are isolated. They feel like they don't have any hope. They don't have anybody they can talk to. We got to change it. We have an obligation to change it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, man, we have somebody in the team that can do each individual thing. They're there to train you, or even the medic, you know, patch you up, whatever you need. Like I said, if you're having a problem, is exactly that. It's a problem. It's a math problem, just whatever. So however it is, we can solve it. That's the beautiful part about this whole thing. But yeah, the only way you're going to know is if somebody, you know, if you ask.
Yeah, I'm looking here, and part of the research here that copied down this thing here that says, research suggests officer rates of completed suicides are 3 times higher than in the general population. And also, the physical effects that take place. There's a Buffalo study from 2012 headed by John Volante at the University of Buffalo, and saying that all these different factors, shift work, long hours, unpredictable schedules, exposure to critical incidents, various physical demands, high rates of on-the-job injuries, and how these contribute to so many different... they measured a lot of the cortisol effects, which is the stress hormone, right? We know that. And how...
Yeah.
When it eventually becomes dysregulated due to chronic stress, and it opens a person to a lot of different diseases. So, obviously, being able to get a handle on this and manage it effectively is critical for the health and longevity of everybody involved. Well, I want to take this thing into how did this manifest itself in fixing your home life, which. Obviously, you've written several books on this topic. Trying to get the names of them here. Get the names in front of me. But you started out with Behind the Badge, 365 Days of Daily Devotion for Law Enforcement. One you did with Colonel Dave Grossman was The Bulletproof of Marriage, a 90-day devotional. Let's talk about some of that and how you can apply what you've learned and put together into the home life.
Yeah, so Behind the Badge is just really a daily devotion. It's really short. It's for cops. And I wrote it short for a reason. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a preacher. But I know cops, and I know that they don't have a lot of time. And so I wrote a devotion that's going to take like 2 minutes to read. And it's very simple to read, but my goal in that was to help them have something that they could put right here as they go about their day, and something that would spark enough interest that they want to go a little bit deeper. That's doing very well. Bulletproof Marriage was not written from a marriage counselor's or marriage therapist standpoint. It was written from a perspective of a guy who did everything in the textbook to destroy it. And that was me. I did everything in the book to screw. I should be sitting somewhere single right now. I should. Mm-hmm. And so I broke it down, and I looked at every area, and I pulled my wife in, and I said, "Hey, can I share this?" She said, "Change the names and facts. You can share it." And so I did. And, then I did some research. I talked to other cops. I talked to other people across the sort of the spectrum across the country, and I pulled in stories, and I wanted to break it down to where it's very simple. And it's 90 days for a reason. Most of the time, police academies are going to be 90 days. Most of the time, initial training is about 90 days for any service you're going to go into. And seldom do we talk about how to manage our relationships after we go through that training. And we don't talk about how to handle that. And so I start this whole thing off.
I don't remember that training either, Marcus. Did you get that?
I know shit, man.
I don't remember going through any relationship counseling.
Don't worry about that.
Right. Ta-da! Guess we're in one.
Guess what?
This kind of needs to be like the Weather Channel for me, all right? Constant updates. I literally ask my wife every 10 minutes if I can do something or if she needs something, just to make sure I'm not effing that up.
I don't do that just for my own entertainment.
That's not right, man. I just...
I do the same thing. Yeah. So it starts off with communication. We got 6 different sections we broke it down into.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Colonel Grossman, we used his points from the Bulletproof Mind seminars that he does, his training that he does for military law enforcement all across. And so we sort of applied those principles throughout. So it starts with communication, how important that is, knowing the tone of your voice, the timing of your conversations, knowing when to bring the heavy stuff in and when to hold off on it. And then we talk about trust and trust issues. And we talk about the intimacy initiative and having all the different areas of intimacy taken care of. And then oneness and affirmation. So it's just broken up into very practical sections. And it's got discussion questions. It's got something for the sheepdog. It's something for the spouse to do every single day, something that they can do in one day. And, you know, I've had, I don't know how many thousands of people that have gone through this. And I've got phone booking just through to D.C. To come out and talk about it. And it is having a profound impact on relationships across the country. And that is why I do what I do now. I'm still telling my story. This is still my outlet. I'm still navigating stuff through. It's continue, like you said, Mark, when we start to train, you know, that becomes an outlet. And that's what I'm doing now, is helping others either navigate the crap that they've caused, accept responsibility for where they're at and fix it and move on, or help to train to avoid those things going forward. So, man, I was hard to live with. There was a time I would come home, I would take my gear off, I would sit in the chair and stare at the wall. I didn't want to talk to anybody. And when she'd say, "How was your day?" Well, I just had I've dealt with 3 rapes, or I've dealt with a robbery, I've dealt with a murder, I've dealt with an infant death, a traffic fatality. I just saw, whatever, lay it out. Do you really want me to regurgitate what I just went through today? So I would say it was good and shut down. It wouldn't say anything else. So right. I kind of walk you through that transition from the time you walk through the door, whether you're coming home from 12 hours of duty, whatever, and kind of transition your conversation tone and your conversation, helping you navigate that point, because it's a very critical point in our daily life. So that's what Bulletproof Marriage is all about. It's forging resilient marriages.
I got a question for you. What do you say to the guy who's listening to this right now? Because there's going to be, or woman that's sitting there listening to this right now, and they're going, "Yeah, I don't care about that. I don't need that." Or they're sitting there, lazy boy. They just got off duty and they're just running over what they had dealt with in the day. And their wife or spouse walks in and drops your book in their lap, and they look at this and say, "Yeah, the last fucking thing I feel like doing is reading about fixing my problems." What do you say to that guy right now to change his mind? Or woman.
Yeah, well, I know that there's people that don't care about it, but I wrote it in a way and with a man that that when you open the book and you start to read it, if you take the initiative and do it, that it'll kind of flip things around. It'll break things up that you're going through. This little book has got more. I wrote it for men to take the initiative, and that's what they're doing. I'll tell you this. I got a 30-year road cop from LAPD, been married for, I don't know, 40 years, whatever.
30 years.
And his wife came in day one and said, "Hey, let's just..." Yeah, oh, forever. So he's kind of stuck, but she came in and said, "Let's do this devotion." He's like, "I am not interested. Not interested. Whatever." And so he sits down and does it anyway because she tells him to. And day two, the same thing. And then he just loses interest. Day three, she says, "Forget it. I'm not coming to you." He goes and gets the book and sits down and goes through it together. And then you got the younger guys who've been married 2 or 3 years doing the same thing. They're taking the initiative of going home to their spouse and they're saying, "I'd really like to try this with you. Let's take 5 minutes a day and go through it." A lot of it has to do with your attitude going into it. If you got a crappy attitude about that and about your marriage, man, I don't want to tell you. You're going to have to make a decision to get help, and you're going to have to make a decision to do the work to make it better, or you're going to be fixing bigger problems down the road. So fix the little problems now. Take the initiative. Go through the challenge, and then it'll help you. You know, it's not written. I didn't write it to beat men over the head, because a lot of times that's what marriage books do. They tell you all the crap you're doing wrong and how sorry you are, and I really just don't think there's any room for that. And this is to build both spouses up and build that whole family unit together so it's stronger. I had a guy, I've encountered some of these people, they messaged me and I said, "There's no such thing as bulletproof marriages. This is total bull, so I have to explain to them how bulletproof vest works, because they've obviously never put on one. it still hurts. If you take around, it doesn't stop everything, but
it can be uncomfortable sometimes. It rub you the wrong way.
It doesn't mean that we're not going to be good marriage. It doesn't mean that we're not going to take some rounds. It doesn't mean we're not going to take some hits and blows. But I think that's the beautiful thing about it. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to fight for each other, with each other, and together. We're going to have each other's back, and reiterating that we're on the same team. Like, we're on the same team. Mm-hmm. And too often we become opposites and we become enemies. It becomes conflict. And so, so that's my message to them, is just I think to to pick it up and give it a shot and understand that there's more people out there like you, and you're not in it alone. And that's probably why we have like 1,000 people in a private group that are going through this together. And it's from literally every branch of the military and all 50 states, law enforcement, you name it. And man, it's doing some good stuff.
Well, that's awesome.
But I get it. It's not.
No, I believe that's important work. My brother is actually a law enforcement officer. He's a lieutenant in Ohio, and I know that he talks to me about this kind of stuff, and I know it's important. And I appreciate everything he does and the people he works with as well.
Yeah, I can't stress the fact enough that a lot of people look to the SEAL teams and what we do because of how proficient we are at our job. And the reason we're proficient at it is because of how detailed we get in our conversations. And I mean, it's just, we talk it out, and until, and there's always going to be one guy that'll, and it's usually not, he's not picking it up. It's just that he didn't pick it up as fast or as far ahead as everybody else did. And you can see that, right? When you see it in their eyes, like, oh, all right, man. And then the solid teachers will be like, okay, let's back it up a little bit. And you don't even have to call them out in it, man. You just pick the dude out who knows what's going on and pick on his ass, because then he'll know what's happening, right? And then just remember, man, you were always in that spot. I heard times where you didn't know anything.
That's true.
I mean, let's take it all the way back. The wonderful part about a woman when you get into a marriage with her, that is a perfect teammate. Complete opposite of you standing right there, right? They can do things we can't. I mean, you call it a marriage. There's multiple names for it. Melly and I, we're our own SF team. You know what I'm talking about? That woman watches out for me like nobody's business. And I know I was absolutely put down here, had to go through everything I had to go through because I have to watch out for her just to make sure her and that family gets whatever they need. For whatever reason, they're special, and they got one of me tacked on top of them. So I'm thrilled to death I get to live here and hang out with them.
I think that's evident.
Right?
We see that every day.
Yeah, man. It's true. In all actuality, man, the wife, when you get married, that's the one person you can, even guys, you're not supposed to be tough around your wife. Man, you got to act tough around your wife. That means you're getting picked on the outside. Straight up, man. Mm-hmm. Being opened up and you're just like you said, when you get home, you take your arm off, throw it in the floor. I didn't even bring mine in the house, right? Mm. You walk in, and I'm a cook, a groundskeeper, and if you got kids, remember when you, like your grandfather, your great grandfather, you found out like he was just a total badass. You're like, wait a minute, that was just grandpa. He wasn't a badass. Like, yeah, he was. Grandpa is a straight up badass, right? But he would never have shown you that side because of the love, right? Yeah, you don't have to. If you're acting tough at home, then you go get a bag and punch that thing, or that's what you need to talk about, because that's the one person you don't have to be tough around.
That's right.
Well put.
I mean, you can take it too far too. I'll stub my toe and complain to Melanie for a week. Like, babe, man, this toe is really hurting. I ain't even lying. My boys come around. I'm like, what's up? You want to go kick the bag?
Right. Exactly. Well, unless you've got another big question you want to get into,
I mean, I could ask him all day. Go ahead.
I mean, actually, we really could, but I don't know how much time he's got left.
Yeah,
we got. Well, anyways. We usually like to close out our show by asking our guests for a couple pieces of advice, and they can be anything. It doesn't have to be even related to what we've talked to. Just some things that if you have the opportunity to pass on a couple concepts or principles that you found to be particularly valuable in life, and just pass those on to people, and they can you never know who's listening and who's going to take what away from what's said here. So,
and then where everybody can find you in your books, and so we can push you on this side.
Yeah. As far as any advice or principles I'd give you, I'm going to keep it really, really simple because I want you to remember it.
Exactly.
And that's know what you believe, know who you believe in. Believe in something bigger than yourself. I know that there's so many different faiths out there, but I'm thankful for the faith I've got and the faith that many share. You got to believe in something bigger than you. At one point or another, you're going to have to rely on that. And so I could give you like 12 or 13, so we'll just leave it with one. And then you could visit my website, theadamdavis.com, T-H-E-AdamDavis.com. Mm-hmm. And there's information on all my books. It's also on killology.com. You can find me there on the Colonel Grossman's site. Their books are listed there. And, man, I'd love to connect with you also. So Facebook is the official Adam Davis.
All right. And what's the name of the book that's going to be coming out in the spring next year?
Yep. That's called On Spiritual Combat, 40 Missions for Victorious Warfare.
I'm looking forward to you sending that to us.
Hey, do we have his number? We have his number, Wizard?
Yeah, we do, bud.
We got a cell number?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think that sounds very interesting. Looking forward to it.
I would like to send you a copy of Bulletproof Marriage also, if that would be okay.
I think sometimes. And look, man, you don't have to be messed up to read this kind of stuff. I mean, I always looked at it like it just made me more
that's
proficient.
That's a misconception.
That's huge. I mean, a lot of guys, like, it's kind of like buying your wife something for the kitchen. You know, and I'm like, what are you saying? You're going to ask in the kitchen? I'm like, no. I mean, I'm going to. I've made that mistake. That's why I'm bringing that up. But, I mean, a lot of times these books show up, and if you walk into the house with Bulletproof Marriage, your wife's like, what's wrong with our marriage? I'm like, nothing, but now it's about to be bulletproof.
No, listen.
It's all how you sell it, boys. It's all how you sell it.
I've got people who have said, I don't need any help with my marriage. I just wanted to see if there's something I could use in training others with it. I don't need any help. My marriage isn't broken. Or somebody said, we just like to go through devotions together. It just gives us, you know, some time together every day. It doesn't have to be jacked up to go through it together.
Oh, absolutely.
I wouldn't say it to thinking he's wrong. No, we're good.
Yeah, it's like saying, I don't need to change the oil in my engine.
Yeah, there's people have wonderful marriages. Yeah. Well, people have wonderful marriages, but they don't know how to explain why their marriage is wonderful. But, you know what I'm talking about? They just don't. You ask people like, man, they get along great, and they're just, why, how do y'all do that? I don't know, man. Just do. I used to say all the time, like, why are y'all so close? I don't know, man. Just are. But when you got somebody who can help explain it, I mean, just always think about growing up, man. You always need everything explained to you. All right, and then as you learn, you pick up things, you learn how to learn. But it's still, I mean, we kind of get away from that as we get at a certain age. We do that, man. You know, they kind of like fall away from reality, if you will, and we think we can pick everything up on our own. You're like, oh, I got this, right? And then you obviously picked it up from something, right? And hopefully it's not the wrong thing, because you can mix that up. But if you spend enough time around people, because anything you're reading or it's written by somebody, right? And you'll know if it's real. It'll make sense.
That's right.
I mean, just remember I was telling you, man, when Melly was telling me to cook dinner, I'll get on YouTube and start watching cooking shows until my mouth starts watering. I'm like, okay, that's obviously.
Oh, this is his new project.
Yeah, Mel's got me in the kitchen.
Oh, man.
But I didn't know how to do that.
It is something to witness.
So
he's
I will watch
talented.
And talk to, and see everything. I always looked at everybody. It's like an intel officer. I'm like, what do you got for me? You know, if they can't teach anything, then you teach them something. That's basically that's how conversations happen, and that's how that's how you learn things about yourself you never knew.
Well, sorry, buddy.
No, I was like, you don't need any, and you don't need people just smashing it in your face. It can be just as subtle as a conversation.
Yeah,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. The curiosity, the introspective, and like you said, know why, have something to believe in, and know why you believe it. Well, Adam. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's been a pleasure. We could certainly do this again sometime in the future. Maybe after that book comes out in the spring.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? We'll push it.
But
I'd love to. I appreciate y'all having me, man. This is awesome.
I really enjoyed it. I know I'm going to make sure my brother passes this out to the people on his department, or at least make them aware of it.
Yep.
And everything that you are working on, is as well as Mr. Grossman and Lieutenant Colonel Grossman.
That's why I always go with Doc. if he's a light colonel, you automatically call him colonel, right? You always go and throw him.
Right,
you toss higher now. Okay.
Yeah. And everything that he's putting out, and best to you, sir. And thank
man.
You for sitting down.
Thank
with
you
us.
Again for being here on Saturday. God bless.
Thank y'all so much.
All right, buddy.
That guy was great. I enjoyed that.
Wasn't it, though? I think there's a lot of other people that are going to find that. There's so much practical information in there.
You kind of, man, you just don't think about topic. The whole fact that we talk about everything else but one thing, usually when you got a problem. But he's right, though. I mean,
I think it's start opening
probably
that door.
A generational thing, too.
I don't know. I think it's it comes naturally with the line of work. It's just there's a persona, the aspect of weakness, though it is not weakness, it can be construed as that, but then vulnerability particularly, because to be vulnerable to discuss those things, and they run in direct contrast to what we, when you're actually boots on the ground, when you're actually getting it done.
Yeah.
You can't be vulnerable like that.
No, I agree. You're going to figure that out before you get out there. That's why you can't let that stuff fester. When I'm at with generational, I mean, it's usually you are the way the pass down was. So, I mean, like we were.
Yeah, emulating those who went before
you. Yeah,
right?
Exactly, man, yeah, how they were. So, thanks, man, Adam, for coming on here. That was awesome. That being said, we're going to wrap this up. We got some house cleaning stuff, and then we'll get to a reader story. Before that, let's do this. How you guys can listen to us. You can stream us directly from our website, tnqpodcast.com, or virtually any other podcast app, whether iPhone or Android. iTunes, Stitcher, Podyssey, CastBox, and Radio Public. That's where you can find us. So tune us in.
All right. And for social stuff, if you like to follow social media, start out with Team Never Quit. You'll find us on pretty much any of the major social media outlets, specifically Instagram. We put some attention into, so the show is TNQ Podcast. You can find Marcus at Marcus Luttrell. You can find myself, the Wizard, at the_wizard_TNQ.
And if you're logging on, it's tnqpodcast.com. Listen directly to all of our episodes. We have merchandise from anywhere from shirts to hats, and the best part about it is our listener write-ins, of course. And you can find that under the tab at Share Your Story. Well, thank you guys again for coming out. Adam, again, man, that was an amazing story. And we're going to get into another amazing story with one of our write-ins. This is from Sean. I've had mixed feelings about sharing this, and I still have a hard time asking for help. It makes me feel weak, even though I know it doesn't make me weak. In 2007, I became a firefighter with the local department. This event was like a dream come true. I'd always wanted to be in a career that allowed me to help people, although my time there, I saw many terrible things. But they never affected me. At least that's what I thought. I left the fire department, and after 3 years, I became a police officer. I felt that I could do more good as a police officer as a firefighter. You're waiting for something to happen so you can do your job. Police officers can go get out and be proactive. I thought this would be a perfect fit for me. I love guns, driving, and I don't like to sit still. During the law enforcement academy, I excelled, which I saw as a sign. This is what I was meant to do. After graduation, I headed out for my first phase of OJT, on-the-job training. And as the brand new officer, I was excited. Nervous a little and scared, my first phase went really well, and I felt great. 2 weeks into the second phase, I began to have really bad anxiety. I could no longer sleep. There were dreams of getting in gunfights with constant malfunctions, previous calls. For bro, you're not the only one that has that dream. the nightmare where your gun doesn't work.
Oh, that's like where you can't run away from
can't
things.
Run away.
You can't
if you try to hit somebody, it's
kind
like
of strength, everything's slow. It's just a natural
brother,
extension of that phenomenon. Yeah.
It gets us to us all, brother. Don't worry. Anyways, I would be fine, but when I got home that I could barely function. Anxiety led to depression, which led to thoughts of taking my own life. Throughout all of this, I kept telling myself to tough it out and don't make your problems someone else's. I held on until I could hold on. I couldn't hold on anymore. One day after I got home from the gym, my sister and I spoke. She said that I seemed off, and I asked if I was okay. I said that I was. I couldn't hold it any longer, though. I broke down and told my sister everything that was going on. The tears would not stop flowing, and all I could think about was, how is this happening to me? I've always been so easygoing and happy. My career is over. I can't tell the guys at work that what I'm going through. My sister then called my mother and explained what was happening. They both took me to the doctor, and I was told that I was suffering from PTSD and had an acute depressive episode. All I wanted to know was how to fix it and get back to work. I was so scared to tell my sergeant. I was so scared of losing my job. I, unfortunately, made a terrible decision and lied to my sergeant, saying I had a family emergency. I had a family emergency and I wouldn't be in for my shift. Feeling a lot of guilt, I called my sergeant shortly after our first conversation and told him the truth, which didn't go over well. I was put on light duty and given some time off. When I came back to work, I went through a fit-for-duty eval and was given the green light to hit the streets. I was so excited, but still, I didn't feel 100%. After my first week back, everything seemed to be going well, but on the last day of my work, my sergeant saw that I was having a rough day, and he sent me home early for the weekend. When I came in the next week, I got pulled into the chief's office, and I was told that I was going to be reassigned or to be terminated. Immediately, my heart sank. Why did I come forward with this? Why did I listen to these people at the academy that said, if you're ever having an anxiety or an issue, we're here for you? I hit rock bottom. Everything I had worked so hard for was ripped away from me. This all happened in 2011. I've grown so much over that period of time, it is still hard for me to discuss this with anyone, and I struggle with the feelings of purpose. I have been watching and listening to your podcast for a little while. Today I watched a podcast with Sean Ryan, and it literally had an effect on me. Hearing his story and how a lot of you hard-charging mothers have struggled really let me know I'm not alone on this. I really look up to you guys and appreciate what you do. I'm not a quitter, and I will never give up until the good Lord makes me or takes me. Thank you for your time and for all you do. Team Never Quit. This is Sean out. Brother,
I don't know if we could have found a more appropriate story
exactly.
for that. I mean, it illustrated, it's like a case study for what we talked to Adam about.
It is. And, that, and I mean, just like you said, man, there's a lot of people out there going through it. We all go through certain things at certain times of life, certain phases, and always know that we do. We have to go through them. And I think once more and more of us realize that, and you talk openly to your friends about what's going on, man, and that just, that's what they're there for. They're there for the knowledge, man, and for something to lean on. I mean, the biggest among us have been knocked down to a knee and needed some shoulders to crawl up on.
And you need to realize that there's other people out there thinking exactly what you are.
Yeah.
And they are concerned about bringing it up to anybody.
Sure.
But you just have to find, you know, you have to find that those people, that person that you're going to be able to lean on, like you're talking about, Marcus.
That's it. That's it, man. It's the brotherhood. That's why we do this. And, you know, we'll never, just like we watch out for each other on the line, we'll watch out for each other behind the line and everywhere in between. It's incumbent upon us to do that, man. That's what creates that bond and makes us so strong. That's what makes this place so special. And that's what makes all y'all so special, man. And thank y'all for coming on here. And to the fans, thanks for keep coming back and listening to us, man. We love y'all. We can't tell y'all enough. We don't even have the words to describe how amazing this job is. So thank you for it.
Glad to have you with us.
Yeah, God, thank you for everything. Jesus, we love you. And I'm out.
Out.
Team Never Quit Radio.